and welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and it's really nice to come into your home or your car, wherever you're listening to the program via the internet or the radio program, whether it's on SoundCloud, iTunes, or at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We are grateful for your participation through your listening to the program and the information that comes forth from our guests. And we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com. And as I mentioned, archiving the podcasts both at richarddugan.com, SoundCloud, and iTunes. So a couple of additional ways for you to hear the program, listen to it over and over again, subscribe, I suppose. I'm still learning about this stuff, folks. You know, they may have dubbed me the ops manager and the IT guy here at this radio station, but I'm still trying to figure all of this stuff out myself. Today is going to be kind of a fun program. I think you're going to enjoy it. I know that I will, because it deals with a subject that we all usually, most of us, tend to like, and that is going to the movies. We're not going to be talking necessarily with a critic. He doesn't call himself that. But he's been on the program before. And Brent Merchant, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me back, Richard. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking, of course, about your latest release. But we're going to be talking about a lot of other areas, too, in relationship to the movies, what's being put out there for us to watch. Some incredible stuff. I mean, just some amazing, visual artistry. And, of course, we just wrapped up earlier in March of 2018. We just wrapped up the Oscars. And my wife and I, as I was sharing with you before we started, we don't have local television online. Although if they moved it over to CBS, then we'd get to watch the Oscars. But we don't have the ABC connection here. But we can watch it on demand. So when it was available on Hulu, we just went ahead and fired her up and paused it when we needed to. And, you know, as I was saying, if the dogs got a little too rambunctious, put them outside and continue on listening to the statements, the speeches, the jokes, etc., etc. And also seeing the laundry list of not only people, but movies that are out there. And there have been some incredible movies that have really taken us to the far reaches or edges, for some of us, of our own imaginations. It's like, really? I never would have thought of that. You know, you're going to remember the name of this movie before I will, but I can give you the general scenario. And it was with, oh my gosh, can you believe I can't remember this guy's name? He was the lead in Titanic in 1998. Leo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio. And he was in this other film years later where it was layered, dream layer upon dream layer.
Oh, that was Inception.
Inception. When I saw that movie, it just, the concept, which I understood, but it just blew me away. I'm going, wow, this is incredible. Then, of course, you had another great movie that came out a few years back called Pi, about a young boy on a boat in the water with a tiger. That was fascinating. Then, of course, we've had the Matrix series. And, of course, getting into more science fiction with Star Wars and obviously Star Trek and different things. But one of the aspects, and I have to ask you if this crossed your mind, if this was really the best title for this book, considering the fact that most people who are millennials, I guess born, what, in 2000 or after, probably wouldn't get the reference. But you and I would understand it, because in the early days of film, when they were showing them in the theaters, you'd have, usually, depending upon the length of the film, three reels of film. And it was that third reel, as we speak of, in the context of the title of your latest endeavor, your latest work, which is Third Reel, Conscious Creation Goes Back to the Movies.
Well, yes, I admit it. I'm dating myself a bit with the title, but I explained in the introduction to the book that back in the day when movies were shown on these giant spools of film known as reels, during the first two reels or so of the movie, you would end up getting the setup for the story. You'd be introduced to the characters and so on and so forth. But by the time you got to the third reel, that's when the plot would thicken. That's when all the story information would really start to go maybe in different directions, or when the characters would be pressed against having to really come through on their plans, things of that nature. And to me, that was a critical juncture in terms of the way the story would play out and whether or not the characters would succeed or fail in their endeavors. That idea translated into the title for the book, which I called Third Reel, R-E-A-L, because when you employ the conscious creation process, which has been the subject of my two previous books, the idea that you end up creating the reality that you experience through the power of your beliefs and intents, when you get to your own, what I call, third reel moment, that's a point when, you know, it's a make or break point for the success of how you're going to succeed or fail with whatever you're trying to achieve. And I felt that this concept would make a good way to kind of further elaborate on the conscious creation process. In the first two books, I gave you the setup, and in this book, I'm giving you sort of the nuances and the additional little tricks that you can employ to help make the process move more smoothly and more effectively. And I compared it to, you know, the analogy between the third reel in the movie and the third reel moment that you experience yourself when you're trying to make the process, you know, move on to the result that you want to achieve. So some people who thought I made a typo when I titled the book, thinking that I should have meant third reel, R-E-E-L. No, that wasn't a typo. It really was meant to be third reel, R-E-A-L, kind of a play on words to show you the analogy between those two ideas.
And that's very interesting. And I, you know, things go racing through my mind as you're sharing this concept. This has nothing to do, folks, with the third half of your third of your life. This has to do with things that you want to bring about. And it's very interesting because when we watch a movie, now, obviously, we have no third reel anymore, at least as far as on demand and those types of things. But when you get to, say, the last final third of the film, of whatever film it is, and by the way, there was a movie that came out a couple of years ago. It was, what was it, Batman versus Superman. I did watch that movie, and I thought it had a great message. But what really frustrated me more than anything else was in that third, that final third of the film, you found out why Batman was versus Superman, and I thought, you mean to tell me that you guys have been fighting because of something that if he had just stopped and talked about it, of course, there will be those. Well, yeah, but then there would have never been the first two thirds. And this is what I don't know. It's one of those aspects of both movies as well as television series that, I don't know, have I watched too much of both that I can watch the first few minutes? I know where this thing's going, and there's no point in watching this because I'm just going to get frustrated because it just seems so ridiculous to me now. It's like, will you please just talk to each other and resolve this? This does not need to go on and on and on and on, creating trauma, drama, and stuff that you then have to fix. There's a great scene, for example, in the movie Looking for a Friend for the End of the World, and the main character, he finally comes across his father, and his father wants to deal with all of the stuff that he thinks his son wants to deal with as far as his abandoning him and not being there for him during those moments in his life. And the kid says he's an adult, but the son says, hey, Dad, I don't want to deal with that. I just want to be here with you right now. That stuff's not important because none of this is going to matter because we're all going to be annihilated here in the next couple of hours. He didn't even, you know, and that's kind of where I come from sometimes. Yeah.
When you talked about the idea that you think you've seen a lot of this before in many movies, that, unfortunately, is kind of one of the problems with the movie industry these days, the increasing lack of originality in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You see endless reboots and sequels and franchises where the stories end up getting really kind of retold over and over and over again, sometimes just in slightly different ways, but it's more or less the same thing. That's why I'm so appreciative when movies come along that really take things in a different course, because you have endless possibilities through conscious creation to produce virtually anything that you want. And given that, there's no reason why we can't continue to keep doing new and fresh stuff all the time. That's a big part of the reason why I'm a big fan of, say, like independent films, because they do a good job of that, foreign films. And also, you know, when you have courageous filmmakers and distributors and studios that are willing to take a chance on something completely different that, you know, you have not seen before, because that keeps things alive. That keeps things, you know, fresh. And in many ways, for me, those are the movies that are really in the spirit of what the conscious creation process is all about.
Well, I know that it's, you know, it's not easy for these people who make movies to make movies. I mean, and the money side, even if you had a bottomless pit of money, it's not enough to just throw a bunch of people together and put a bunch of effects and sound and music and, there's our movie, and do that in a week and a half. You know, I mean, it just, it's not quite the same. I mean, what was it? Was it Cameron who, it took 10 years to do Avatar? I know it was somebody who took a...
It took a very long time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute. Over the course of, let's just say it was 10 years, technology is going to change, and, you know, people are going to come and go, and this, how are you going to keep the flow going over such a huge expanse, as opposed to got to do this in 10 days, and then it looks rushed, and it looks bad, and it sounds bad. I have to say, this is the first Oscar ceremonies that I watched, where I don't think I caught one audio mistake. Everybody's mic was working and working properly. And yet I've heard it go bad in the Grammys. I've heard it go bad in the Country Music Awards, at the Emmys. I'm going, you people are at the pinnacle of your careers and you're screwing this up? Really? But what about that in terms of... coming up with an idea, a conscious creation in the form of a movie, and there are so many I haven't seen that I want to see, and some I don't even know about that I really should see. I mean, that's probably the biggest problem, is there. It seems like there are as many books written every day that are great books. People think that, you know, everybody should read them and get, you know, and digest the ideas, as there are movies. And it's like, how do you keep up? I mean, this must have been a daunting task creating this. But let's talk about that other aspect of the creative process and the short versus long timeline and getting that out there, maybe in a timely manner. Maybe it's meant to wait 10 years because maybe the public isn't quite ready for it.
Well, I think a lot of times you need to wait for the right moment for these things to come together. I mean, as long as you've got the idea and the intent clear in your mind and you're putting it out to the universe saying, I want to bring this into being, you need to work on drawing to you the circumstances and the conditions to help make it possible. That's a concept in many ways known as synchronicity, you know, mm-hmm. where you end up finding the right people at the right time to help do the right things for you in making your project, get born. And sometimes that takes a little while before you're ready and the other individuals are ready, and you have to meet at a time when you're both prepared to move forward with it, because you both got your ducks in a row as far as your beliefs for how you're going to make this happen. That's one of the chapters that I put in the new book titled Sentience and Synchronicity, where it talks about the idea of you know, when the timing is right, the resources will come together and you'll have, you know, your own third reel moment when it comes to being able to bring about the results you want to achieve.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about you love especially independent films because, you know, they're willing to, you know, do these different, take on these new and innovative ideas. One of my favorite films that I watch, and I love watching a film, takes you right to the end and gives you a surprise ending. Most films don't do that. You kind of know going in how it's going to end. You know, it's pretty formula. But there was one I watched a few years back, Midnight in Paris. I could have sworn I knew exactly how that was going to end. The boy gets girl, meets girl, gets girl, loses girl, and then the boy gets girl. And spoiler alert, the boy doesn't get the girl at the end. And I thought, how fantastic. I mean, sad for the boy, didn't get the girl, but it didn't end like you thought it would. And I thought, that's cool. I like that. I like to have a surprise ending. But when it comes to consciously created films, and as you talk about in your first two books, as well as this one, the third reel, R-E-A-L, we are all looking, as we talk about on this program, for those new ways of living. We want everyone to thrive. We don't want to leave anybody behind. Nobody should be left behind. And yet, our present society is that a whole lot of people are being left behind. And we want to change that. And we can change that in a movie because we can make it fiction and say, and they all lived happily ever after. You know, you hear that an awful lot at the end of stories, and they all lived happily ever after. Now, certainly that doesn't add for, make for a very exciting life. To some people, you know, where's the thrill? Where's the challenge? You know, how are you going to build character if you don't have drama in your life? If you don't have, you know, those kinds of things. And I'm sitting here going, I'm 57, almost 58 years of age. I've had about all the drama I can pretty much muster, especially in the last couple of years living here on the Central Coast, dealing with fire and mudslides and all of the myriad of just crazy stuff that impacts us. And that's just from Mother Nature. You don't have to talk about the nature of man and what he's been doing, you know. And then you throw that in and it just adds a whole new thing. And I'm going, could we just have a year of calm where we don't have to, you know, think about too much and we can just, you know, plow our fields and plant our corn or whatever it is we want to plant and harvest it and have a harvest festival at the end of the thing and store up for the winter and then have a nice, you know, winter solstice and work our way back around to spring. Just one season where we can just do that. And of course, there will be those who say, no, that's not the way it works.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because one of the points where I find a lot of people who are interested in conscious creation kind of step off the platform with it is when something calamitous or, you know, frustrating or annoying appears in their lives because they're saying, "Well, that's not what I was planning for. That's not in my game plan." Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, so why would I go out and create something like that? Well, a lot of times, in order to get to where we want to get to, we need to take some of these missteps to teach us things. And they often teach us things that are going to prove valuable in bringing about the desired outcome that we ultimately want to get. So to me, conscious creation in many ways is about the growth, evolution, and development of our spirits, our souls. It has to do with learning particular life lessons that get us over humps that we didn't realize we had to get over to get to where we want to get to. And it ends up really in a way where nothing is wasted in the long run, even though it might not seem like that at the time. But it ends up, you know, proving to be, you know, just the ticket that we need sometimes to get to the result that we want to achieve. And movies, I think, actually serve as a really good source of examples for that because they show us people sometimes going through really great traumas and really great dramas. And, you know, you might want to ask yourself when they're going through it, why did they draw those circumstances to them? But when you see them overcome them, when you see them essentially turn the proverbial lemons into lemonade, you understand that, oh, yeah, they had to do that in order to get to where they wanted to go. And in the long run, that proves to be significant because, you know, it leads to the success we want to achieve.
Yeah. I guess maybe I'm being a little naive, even at the age of 57. I want to go out to the main street here in Santa Barbara called State Street. And I'm very fortunate that I can take a 20-minute walk and I can be at the oceanside. I can be at the beach. That's my conclusion. I want to be able to make that walk with little or no resistance. I want to enjoy the feeling of walking, of my feet moving step at a time as I get closer and closer, and I can start to smell the salt air, and in some cases I can hear the seagulls, and my destination is that place, is that one spot, and I don't want to run into friends who would recognize me and want to chat for a little while, or be accosted by panhandlers, or even retailers who have people standing outside their door. Hey, come on over here, almost like a circus barker. I just want to make that walk uneventful. The walk is the event, and of course, the destination is, of course, the oceanside. And to some, we'll say, well, boy, that's awful boring. Well, not to me. And maybe it is because of the fact that I've had a whole lot of stuff going on in my life over the years. You know, and so it's one of those things, it's one of those challenges that I face when I have these kinds of conversations, because I do hear that comment that I made earlier. Well, you know, those challenges that are in your life, they're what build character, to which I usually respond, can't we build character another way? You know, and I know that's just the way it is. It really is. And you're right. There have been some movies as well as television programs, and maybe you can touch upon this as well, where they've run several stories all at the same time. And on the face of it, in reels one and two, shall we say, they have absolutely nothing to do with one another. Each of these three or four or five stories are independent. But you get to the third reel, and then you start seeing where story one intersects story two and then departs. And then story two intersects story three and then departs. And three might parallel story four for 10 or 15 minutes and then departs and veers off and so forth. And what they're trying to show you is our interconnectedness. And when I first started seeing television shows like that, that also blew me away. I'm going, wow, there's somebody in Hollywood, somebody making television shows that's getting it and is trying to give it to the rest of us. Have you seen many films that are sharing that particular concept? Because to me, that is certainly a higher consciousness, a concept that we are all connected, but most of the time, all we see is separation.
Well, sure. In my first two books, I actually devoted an entire chapter to movies having to do with the idea of connection and connectedness. As far as a film that's in the new book where that idea comes out, one of the best examples I can think of is probably the sci-fi classic Cocoon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you ask yourself, what does a group of residents from a senior citizen home have to do with extraterrestrials?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And a boat owner who runs a ship off the coast for people going on fishing expeditions and things like that. I mean, these three different stories seem to have absolutely no bearing on one another individually when you start out. But as the movie plays out, you begin to see how they all become interwoven with one another to spin this marvelous tale having to do with all kinds of really interesting ideas. In this particular case, I used it as an example of a film that illustrates how we can overcome some of the limitations in our lives. And it really shows that by bringing together, you know, different parties that you wouldn't think would interact with each other in the first place. That kind of relates to what I was talking about earlier when I was mentioning the idea of synchronicities, where, you know, you have these senior citizens who are kind of sitting around, you know, waiting for the end to come, and all of a sudden they have this encounter with extraterrestrials that completely changes their lives, takes in a completely different direction. So those are the kinds of things that I find are really fascinating when you find wondrous tales in the movies that help to illustrate these various conscious creation principles.
Well, now, I'm curious as to how you went off on this. And by the way, the thought just occurred to me that the third reel is part three of a trilogy. Now, you ever put that in that context, that you've created for yourself a little trilogy there?
Well, I hadn't originally planned for it that way, but that's certainly the way it's turned out. So I guess maybe on some part there's something in my belief set that said, yeah, you're going to do a trilogy, and they're all going to be working together, and they're going to give people a cohesive message that they can use to help to make this conscious creation process work for them. So, hey, if it works, I'm not going to complain.
And again, you're not a critic. You are, I would consider you more of an observer of these films and what messages they bring out. And
I often use the term film analyst. And
analyst.
The reason for saying that is because when I think of a film critic, somebody who writes for a newspaper or a television show or a radio show or something like that, they're to me like a consumer reporter for the movie-going public. They take a look at everything that comes out onto the marketplace and then says yay or nay as far as whether they think audiences should go see it. I don't do that. I pick my movies a little more carefully because I want to use movies as the means for helping to explain how the conscious creation process works. I pick and choose what I see and what I review pretty carefully. And as a general rule, when it comes to the reviews that I write online or that I put into the books, I pick things that basically illustrate the principles well and that succeed as creative vehicles and as teaching vehicles. I don't see the point in devoting a lot of ink or cyberspace to things that I really wouldn't recommend. So if I end up seeing something that I don't like, I usually won't write about it. The one exception to that is if a movie is really going out of its way to appeal to a metaphysically oriented or New Age oriented audience, and it doesn't deliver the goods, then I won't hesitate to let people know, saying, you probably want to avoid this because it doesn't come through the way it should. But that's usually the only time when I will, you know, go out of my way to write quote-unquote negative reviews. And in that regard, that's what distinguishes me from what I think a typical movie critic does. So that's why I use the term film analyst as opposed to film critic.
Mm-hmm. I've never really trusted film critics because 99.9% of the time, if they hated it, I'll go see it or watch it on TV or Netflix or what have you. And I'm going, I don't know what the hell they were watching. I thought that was great. And then the reverse is true, too. They just loved it. It was the next best thing since sliced bread. And I'm going, what the hell were you watching? That was awful.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit. And when it comes to movies that have to do with metaphysical or New Age thought or anything of an alternative spirituality nature, regrettably, I find in many cases they just don't get it.
Yeah.
They don't get the message of the film, and when they attempt to write about it, they end up giving kind of a skewed view of what the movie was really about. Now, there are exceptions, but I would say that as a general rule, a lot of them, particularly some of the younger critics who are out there, they just don't really get what the pictures were trying to get at in the first place.
I have to put M. Night Shyamalan in that category because We saw the trailers on TV, which sparked my sort of interest in the film. I can't even remember if it was The Awakening or which one it was, but I remember the very first one I went to see, the very first M. Night Shyamalan film I went to see, and when it was over, I'm going, well, that wasn't anything like the trailer, but I really liked the movie. It was great. And then when we went to see, I think it was The Awakening, that was when every time the wind kicked up, you know, somebody died, you know. And I watched that film, and we watched it in the theater. I think we were sitting in the second or third row, too. And the theater wasn't really that full, but there were quite a few folks there. Now, the trailers, again, did not match what the film was about. You know, it was portrayed more as a horror film, you know, a scary kind of thing, right? And at the end of the movie, as the credits are rolling, I hear from the back of the theater, going to your point, someone says, "Is that it? Is that all there is?" And I'm thinking, he didn't get it. It went right over his head. And that's what happens an awful lot in the movie theater, you know, when we go to see certain films, you know, and people are kind of bewildered when they walk out because they don't get the metaphysical or the spiritual or the esoteric message that the filmmaker is trying to get across.
Well, that's very true. And actually, using Shyamalan as an example, that for me was the experience that I had with his movie Signs.
Oh yeah,
which came out in,
that was Mel Gibson, wasn't it? Was it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a movie that a lot of critics were saying, "Well, this really wasn't a very good extraterrestrial movie," and my contention was, well, that's because it really wasn't an extraterrestrial movie. That was just the pretext to get you into the story for a much deeper message,
yeah,
which, as I interpreted it, had to do with learning how to get through, like, the dark night of the soul, that sort of an idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just... when I saw some of the reviews coming out about it, I was just kind of shaking my head and saying they didn't get it. They just didn't understand it.
And then also...
It's unfortunate, because they ended up... You know, the critics, unfortunately, have a lot of power in terms of the making or breaking of a movie.
Yes.
Talk about a third reel moment. If they end up trashing something that, you know, that they don't like, it ends up keeping people away from movies that would really be in their best interest to see, especially if they're hoping to learn how to make better use of the way the conscious creation process works.
Yeah.
Then again, there are times when they also get it right,
okay.
And I'm grateful to see that they do. And one film that's out currently, in which the critics have been very favorable, more so actually than audiences at this point, is the new movie that just came out called Annihilation, which is a science fiction movie starring Natalie Portman, and it is terrific. If you have not seen it, go see it. It's a wondrous film that speaks volumes on so many areas in terms of involving science and spirituality and metaphysics and also, you know, loads of conscious creation ideas floating about in it. So, and I'm very glad to see that critics have been as receptive to it as they have so far.
Mm. There was a movie, I think it was last year or the year before, that came out, science fiction, aliens, and these pods that were popping up all over the place. I don't know if they came from above or they came up out of the ground. And I'm trying to remember the name of that film. But it was another one of those that, you know, it's like you get lost in the visual effects, you get lost in what you think or perceive of as the core of the story, or, you know, and the moral of the story is, because of all the other stuff going on, and you almost have to watch it two or three, sometimes four times to really click into what's really happening. There are very few movies, though, that I have... of a metaphysical nature that I have watched more than a couple of times. Yet, I would love to have them in my collection. However, I've gotten to the point now, here we are, the 21st century, on-demand films and everything, where I don't need the collection. I can just go online and let somebody else keep the collection. As long as they give me access to it, I'm a happy camper, you know. Got a nice big 46-inch screen TV in the house, and, you know, which I suppose by some folks would be kind of small, you know, but nonetheless, it meets my needs. And because I used to collect, for example, all of the various versions of A Christmas Carol by different actors, going back to the original 1938 film. And quite honestly, even that story in and of itself has a great spiritual, if not metaphysical, message to it in terms of our getting out of ourselves, let alone the message that, was told over and over again to this guy, Scrooge, that he was perpetuating until his dark night of the soul, shall we say, the three ghosts visiting, and realizing that, gee, life doesn't have to be this way. And that's kind of how I feel, is life does not have to be this way. There are so many other great ideas out there. Who says this is the only economic system that works? We haven't tried anything else. Of course we don't know if anything else works, because we haven't tried anything new, you know, in 100 or 1,000 years. I don't know how long it's been. The same thing with education, the same thing with religion, the same thing, and especially the same thing with politics. You know, oh, we can't change the system. This is the way it's always been. But it's not working. You know, how long?
It's interesting with the on-demand availability of programming these days through streaming services and DVD rentals and all that kind of thing. You know, it's a reflection, I think, of some of the growing awareness that the population in general has of the conscious creation process. The idea that at any given moment, you have endless possibilities for conscious creation expression available to you. And you can draw upon any of those at any given moment to achieve what it is that you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
The availability of these on-demand services in many ways to me is a reflection of that. That, oh, I think I'm in the mood for a comedy tonight. Let's see. Let me watch this one. And you pick it out and, you know, you call it up and you put it in your system and you watch it. Or if you want to watch a classic horror movie, you can do that. Or you want to watch a drama, you can do that. It's showing that you have this range of ideas and this range of possibilities available to you, like a menu at any given moment. So if you've got that, why not draw upon it?
Yeah.
Why stick to the tried and true? Why only have vanilla when you can have, you know, 30 flavors.
Exactly right. Now, what's interesting, too, is that I don't think we've spoken since I've seen this film. And this is one of those that when I saw it for the first time, and I've watched it several times since, my wife and I absolutely love this movie because of its layered story, as well as the visual effects. Oh, holy mackerel. And you're going to, I think you have seen this. I'm almost certain you've seen this film. But the concept is so, in my opinion, over the top, fantastic. It's like, who would have ever thought that this could happen? And that's another aspect we'll get into as well, is what you see on the screen. How much of that over the years has come to pass in our own reality, let alone what you can create on the screen. But the movie I'm talking about is the movie Upside Down. And that's where these two planets are.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Are real close together, to where they each still maintain their own gravitational pull. But they have built their respective civilizations right up to, shall we say, the border of the atmosphere. But we're not talking about hundreds of miles here. We're talking about maybe a few dozen yards. That's how close these planets are to each other. So you have that dynamic going on. Then you have a love story woven in that. And you also have an economic, if you will, economic struggle going on. And one planet, and this is so, it blew me away when I first started watching this, going, unbelievable. You've got literally one planet is the haves and the other planet's the have-nots. You know, but just the concept of it all, and then the way they did the visual effects was just magnificent. It really was, I thought. I mean, this is going back a few years, but it was still a great movie. So, folks, if you get a chance to, on demand or what have you, Upside Down, I couldn't tell you who stars in it or who made it. All I know is it's a neat movie to watch. It really is. We want to continue our conversation because I want to get into some more aspects of fiction becoming reality as we've gone through the ages, and in terms of some of the films that may be out today or that you might be aware of, Brent, that are being made that we might want to keep our eyes open for. And we'll do that as we get as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm here with Brent Marchand, and we're talking about not only the third reel, R-E-A-L, but also about what's being made in not just Hollywood, but literally around the world by the independents as well. What you can see, what you can hear. We'll do that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard here with Brent Marchand, and we're talking about the movies. I feel really lucky to know you and to have you on this program because I get Siskel and Ebert in one person. But again, you're not a critic. You're an analyst. You're a film analyst or a cinema analyst, which I kind of like because it's a little different. My perspective is that even if the critics panned it, you ought to see it anyway because you might want to see what was it that they didn't like. But one of the other great things, too, that you talked about a little, you sort of touched upon before our break, was this aspect of some of the things that we can create in the movies. I'm going to go back to the 1960s and Star Trek, and a lot of the stuff that they had in that television series in particular did not exist. But 40, 50 years later, we have so far surpassed that technology, let alone Next Generation or any of the other sci-fi films and programs that have come out that have had all kinds of incredible stuff. What was it I heard the other no, it was not just the other day, but I heard that I have a Samsung Galaxy, is it 7? I think it's a 7. And even it has more power in it than all of the computers used to launch the Apollo programs combined. That's what I heard, that we have that level of technology at our fingertips that used to fill rooms. And that, to me, is just astounding. So,
well, and that's very telling also about the conscious creation process, too, and the fact that it's a very powerful force that we have available to us at any given moment, not only in terms of the range of possibilities, but also, you know, what we're actually able to accomplish with it when we put our minds to it and apply it properly. And that's been growing over the years, I think, along with the growing consciousness and awareness that this process is out there and that people are now, in many ways, just beginning to become aware of overtly and saying, hey, I think I want to start using this to, you know, reshape the life, my life, and bring it about in the way I want to achieve it.
Mm. Well, that's one of the things we want to talk a little bit about, too, because I've heard this phrase from folks that if you see it on television or in the movies, it already exists in reality. It's just that it's not yet for general consumption. And of course I got to thinking, okay, so where are the avatars? Where are those birds we can hook into and so forth? Fly solo.
Well, I think there is a reason for it. And the fact that when you go back to the conscious creation process and realize that you have an infinite range of possibilities available to you at any given moment, mm-hmm. imagine what it would be like to try to appreciate all of them simultaneously. You'd be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, it would be way too much. So that's, I think, the same thing that's going on with the availability of some of these technologies and so forth, because if you had all of them come onto the market at one time, we'd become overwhelmed. by the possibilities that these technologies afford to us. And I think you even see some of that now.
Yeah.
With what we've got, and that's only a fraction of, you know, everything that's on the scale. So we have to kind of make sure that we move at a pace that's comfortable, manageable, understandable, because if we end up trying to do too much all at once, we'll just get blown away by it and, you know, sitting in a corner and twiddling our thumbs saying, I can't handle it.
No, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. You know, if we were to be given all of the wisdom and the knowledge of the ages right now, fry us up, we'd burn. I mean, that's the analogy from a metaphysical perspective. We'd burn. We couldn't handle it. So,
I mean,
the
some
same
metaphysical
thing.
People have even said that even explains the nature of time, that things unfold in a logical, orderly sequence, one event after another, after another, after another, that if we didn't have time, again, if we were bombarded with all of this stuff instantaneously and simultaneously, we wouldn't be able to cope. So I guess sometimes we may look upon time as being sort of an annoyance or a hindrance, but if you look at the alternative, we should be thankful that we've got it, because it keeps us from getting bowled over by everything that's available to us.
Absolutely. No, I think you're absolutely right. What is it, because you are, I'd probably put you in the category more than just a student thereof, but you are a student of metaphysics, as am I. I consider myself to be a metaphysician, been sort of reading about it and studying it and experiencing things over my lifetime since I was about, since I was about 17. So that gives me about 30 plus, no, 40 plus years. I'm working on math too. I mean, it intrigues the daylights out of me. And I'm wondering, as said student and then some of metaphysics, how, you know, we've talked about the technologies that we see, but what about the higher consciousness concepts that are not tangible? You can't touch them, taste them, smell them, feel them with your hands, you know, kind of tactily, kinds of things that what I see sometimes when I do watch the news is so, the comparison between metaphysics and the caveman. I see more of the caveman than metaphysics going on. But I'm sure there's something, underneath going on too. But it just seems like, God, nobody's getting the message. Nobody is hearing any of this stuff. And we just keep repeating the same things over and over again. Getting that across in
film? I think that, one of the things that's important to understand with the way conscious creation works is that it's based on our beliefs and our intentions. And the beliefs and intentions that we form tend to be drawn upon, they tend to evolve from two sources, our intellect and our intuition. And given the fact that we are living in a society that's very driven by logic, rationale, science, all those sorts of very tangible, identifiable sources of looking at things, we tend to place more emphasis on our intellect. So that's a big part of the reason why you have a lot of these technological developments and mechanical developments and so forth, because that's where we're putting the majority of our focus right now. When it comes to understanding some of these more esoteric, intangible, spiritual, and metaphysical concepts, that's what is more tied to our intuition. And a lot of times we tend to dismiss the intuition because it's seen as being illogical, irrational. That just sounds crazy. Why would I want to do that? That's totally foreign and totally opposed to everything that I think and believe.
And yet,
those messages still manage to percolate into our consciousness and into our awareness. And it's as if they're kind of like shaking us and saying, hey, you know, pay attention to me. I've got information here that you need to listen to, you need to act upon. And more important, that you need to incorporate into your belief system, because that's going to affect how your reality ultimately shakes out, if indeed you were truly a practitioner of conscious creation. So it's something that requires us to learn how to strike a proper mix and a proper balance between the intellect and the intuition. Now, I think we're starting to get there, but we've got a lot of road to cover at this point still, because we're so entrenched into the intellectual side of things that we haven't yet fully come to understand or trust the benefits of the input of our intuition. If we do that, and if we learn to balance it more with the intellect, I think you'll find things going a lot more smoothly in the world. But we haven't quite gotten there yet. I would say, give it time. Also, I think people need to have experiences where they can see the result appear firsthand from the input of their intuition.
Yeah.
Because that will end up being very convincing to them. If they end up having these kind of aha moments that result from seemingly illogical ideas, they might say, that intuition really does have something going for it. Maybe I should listen to it more often than I do.
Yeah. I mean, I joke with people sometimes regarding intuition, that if you're going to listen to it but not follow the guidance, why do you bother listening?
Exactly.
and at the same time, and again, I say that rather flippantly, but at the same time, you mentioned something earlier about the message getting out regardless of whether or not the person is consciously hearing it. And I used to give a warning regarding this program, but I always gave the warning at the end of the show that basically said, if you've listened to this interview, which of course they had, or they wouldn't be listening to that point, it's too late for you. You've already heard it. Now you have to deal with it. And I shared that with someone once, and they said, that's kind of cruel. That's kind of cruel to say that at the end of the interview. But it goes to the point that we have to be consciously aware of those things that we are taking in through our senses. Not just movies and television, the books we read, the music we listen to, and even the people we associate with. We do have the freedom of association and disassociation. When my wife was going through cancer in 2001, going through cancer treatment and chemo, I said, you need to surround yourself with people who are going to support you. And unfortunately, her ex wasn't supporting her. Now, I couldn't tell her I don't want you to talk to your ex anymore. I couldn't tell her that because she has to make that choice. But what I did tell her was, how do you feel after you talk with him? She said, I don't feel good at all. And yet when you talk with other people and they're supportive and encouraging and saying, hey, hang in there, it's going to get better and so forth. And they're there to support you. How do you feel afterwards? Well, I feel pretty good. Well, there you go. The message we have to put the message out there. We can't not do it. Just because we don't know whether anybody's listening or not.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that if somebody had, as you mentioned, had gotten to the end of the interview, and maybe it was disturbing or upsetting in some way, the fact remains, on some level, they wanted to hear it in the first place.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would not have listened. And that's one of the things with conscious creation that can sometimes be a little tricky for people when they experience something that they think they don't want to experience. They have to realize that just as they draw all the really good things to themselves in their lives, sometimes they end up drawing the negative things to them as well. But there is always a reason for why it's happening.
Exactly.
And what you have to do is not really get, emotionally strung out or upset about it, but sit down and say, okay, why did this happen? Why did this happen to me? What was the reason behind this?
Yeah.
I mean, there was one time when I was traveling to, of all things, a conscious creation conference and ended up getting sick on a plane. And I had been looking forward to going to this conference for a while because I knew it was going to be full of fun exercises and I was going to get a chance to see friends I hadn't seen in a while. And I thought, why did I make myself sick on an airplane that put me in a hospital for a couple of days instead of going to the conference that I wanted to? Well, the experiences that I ended up having in the hospital were so magical and were so unbelievably synchronistic that I said to myself, this is where I needed to be. I may not have liked it. It may not have been my first choice, but it's where I needed to be to get the lessons I got out of the experience. And, you know, taking them with me when I got out of the hospital and making use of them in my life afterward proved to be some of the most valuable experiences I ever had.
I've often felt, I've heard this from folks, when I was working at places that I really didn't like working at, really didn't want to be there. But my philosophy then was, and still is to this day, that there is no wasted time. There's a reason I'm there. I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to be learning here. Maybe I'll figure it out when I'm gone, when I leave the place, because I'm not getting it now. But there's a reason I'm here. There, you know, and it may be nothing more than we're giving you a breather from your last long-term job. We're just giving you a chance to catch your breath a little bit. That may be all. Or maybe there's a particular task within the overall job, a work experience, that I needed to learn in order to take it to the next level, the next job, the next experience. And so, for example, in 2008, when all those people lost their jobs during the economic downturn, and I'm being kind when I say it that way, one of the first questions that came to my mind was, I wonder how many of those thousands of people hated their jobs. And this was their opportunity to try something new, that they weren't going to follow in the family business, and they didn't want to anyway, you know?
Oh, exactly. Well, before I started writing books and so forth, my career was as a journalist for many years, and I ended up getting downsized out of my job, and it was very upsetting at the time because I liked it. I had been there for a long time, but it was also the time when journalism was beginning to go through a lot of changes, and those changes have since carried through in the time since then. And in many ways, have become even worse. And I kind of look at the state of contemporary American journalism and cringe, thinking this is the field I used to work in.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
And it was because I was not supposed to keep doing anymore. I was destined to be doing something, following a different path. And to do that, I had to get out of what I was doing, so I could move on. That's a message that's important to recognize, that in any act of creation, a lot of times there's an act of destruction as well, where you see the old pass away to make room for something new to take its place. And that's important to recognize, because when you finally see the new phenomenon take shape and fully manifest itself, you end up coming away from it saying, why would I have wanted to stay in that old situation in the first place?
Well,
you might not realize it when you're going through the transition, but when you're out of that transition and you end up looking back, you'll say, ew, that was terrible.
Oh, yeah, it was. But look where I am today. I had
I had
2000, the year 2000. I was laid off from four different jobs. And, you know, after the second one, I thought, oh, my gosh, what's going on? And then the third one, I'm going, what's going on here? And it was funny, too, because the first two times that I was laid off, I'd go to the unemployment office, I'd fill out all the paperwork, and within 2 weeks, I had a new job, so I got no check. So the third and fourth times that I was laid off, I didn't bother going to the employment office because I figured, look, two times the universe is telling me that I'm going to get a job within a couple of weeks. So why waste my time and energy, you know, on going through that process? But it was also very eye-opening, because what ended up happening during that year was I was hired under contract for to run a radio station, and I literally ran the station all by myself. I was the only employee, and yet I kept the programming going, and that was quite an experience. That was a lot of fun. Of course, the heartbreak came when a new station moved into the suite that was owned by the same company, and they began little by little to take away my duties. And I really felt put upon. I thought, oh man, I do that too. And I do that. Oh no, you're not going to be doing that anymore. And you're not going to be doing that anymore because we got somebody else to do that. And what I finally realized was I'm being freed up to do something else.
Exactly.
And that's one of the reasons why I have always wanted to share literally everything I know about the job I'm doing so that I can move on and do other things. You know, as much fun as I have doing this or this or this, you know, and I have great fun doing it, but I'd like to try something else too. But I can't,
well, one of the,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key concepts in conscious creation is the idea that everything is in a constant state of becoming.
Yes.
That we're always evolving, that we're going from one thing to another, to another, to another. And that it's important because it contributes to the growth and development of ourselves, not only as individuals, but also on a greater, deeper level, on our soul level, that we end up discovering things about ourselves that we may not have realized existed. We end up learning about talents and abilities that we didn't know that we had. It reveals the fact that we are inherently multidimensional beings that we generally have little to no awareness of. That's another one of the concepts that I talked about in the new book, is the idea of our multidimensional selves. And I present several films there that show people who go through processes like these where they end up seeing different parts of themselves that they didn't know they existed and that they end up subsequently turning around and making use of in the way that their life unfolds.
Well, all of it is very fascinating. I got into a conversation the other day, and this was based upon an email that I had received from an organization. It's called the Venus Project out of Florida, founded by Jacques Fresco, an architect. And he was a visionary for the future of civilization. And I was watching this video he had done back in 2010 having to do with free will. And that's an aberration. There's no such thing as free will, he says. Because where you, and we, you and I, we've heard this phrase many times before. You are where you are today because of all of the choices that you've made in the past. Well, in essence, and he elaborated further, that's basically what he was saying. So we got into this long philosophical conversation about free will, to which I shared that I've felt for a long, long time, that the concepts, especially in the United States and of its founding, the concepts of liberty and freedom and privacy in particular, because that's a big deal these days, they're all illusions. It's not that they're wrong or they're bad, but they're irrelevant to the higher consciousness aspects of who we really are. If we're all connected, there are no secrets. And I've said this time and time again about our government or anybody else's. If you have no secrets to keep, you have no secrets to keep. So you don't need spies and you don't need to protect information because you don't have any secrets. But we have secrets to keep, so we keep them. We try to hide them from everyone else. But I just thought it was real interesting when this gentleman, when I saw this piece by Jacques in regards to free will, and I thought, well, there is, it's not exactly predestination, but it's all based upon choices that we have made, our past. And so then the phrase would be thrown in, you are where you are because of the choice you made in the past. Where do you want to be in the future? Start making choices that will get you there. And then I'm thinking, well, but isn't that free will?
Exactly. I was just going to say that. I mean, you can't have choice without free will.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're not having a choice. It's as if you're being compelled to move in a particular direction. Well, if you're being compelled to move in a particular direction, you're not making a choice. And if you're not making a choice, you don't have free will.
All right, but you said something earlier, though, that intrigued me, because this concept I have talked about many, many times on this program, and it has to do with intuition. It has to do with this concept that we're talking about now, free will. And there is a character in the Next Generation series of Star Trek that I've talked about over and over again. And Will Lynn, PhD Will Lynn in mythology, and I, he surprised me when we did a program on it back in 2014. We did a 12-part series on mythology from many different perspectives, science fiction, sports, video games. We even did a program on the mythology surrounding the story of the Garden of Eden from the Quranic perspective, which was fascinating. But this character in The Next Generation, to me, not literally, epitomizes our interconnectedness. And I'm, of course, talking about the Borg. They're all individuals. Yeah. They all come from different places in the universe, and yet they're all connected. They're carrying out different tasks, but for a bigger picture or a greater purpose. I was going to say greater good, but in the context of the Borg, it wasn't the greater good per se. But the philosophy behind it, I don't know if Roddenberry was aware of it. Maybe he was, but that's what spoke to me when I started seeing that character show up, and I'm going, wait a minute, that's us listening to our intuition. I'm going to do a different task than Brent's going to do, but it's all for the collective, so to speak. But we'll never probably see the big picture, and maybe we don't really need to, but as long as we're about our life's purpose. So then you start wondering, well, wait a minute, how much of this is free will, and how much of this is being guided? And if it's being guided, am I using my free will to choose to be guided and, so to speak, acquiesce my free will for this higher voice, purpose, direction? You know what I'm saying?
Well, when I wrote Third Reel, the closing chapter of the book I titled Destiny and Value Fulfillment. And a lot of times people will say, well, you know, when somebody achieves a great accomplishment, it seems as if they were destined to do it. Well, in some ways, that's true, but in some ways, it's also a reflection of the concept of what conscious creators call value fulfillment, which is the idea of living your life so that you can be your best, truest self for the benefit of your own self as well as others around you. And in many ways, I believe that if somebody comes into a particular life and wants to carry out their value fulfillment, it's something that they may have decided upon before they came into that life, saying, you know, I want to achieve a particularly great accomplishment or a great achievement in this particular incarnation. So while it may seem like everything automatically folds into place as that person is carrying out that mission, it still has its roots in free will. It may not have originated while being physically incarnated. It may have, you know, occurred before the life began, mm-hmm. but it still came down to a choice. It still came down to a matter of free will, saying, I'm going to embark on this adventure, this odyssey, to achieve this particular outcome that's going to benefit me and that's going to benefit others. Mm. And a lot of times those are very heroic tales. They end up involving people, characters who are taking on challenges that seemingly are insurmountable, but that really aren't, as long as they, you know, stick to their vision, follow their passions, make use of their beliefs and intents in the proper ways to carry out what it is they're trying to achieve, and move forward toward those goals. You know, some of the movies that I present in that chapter include things like the film Woman in Gold with Helen Mirren, and also the Jackie Robinson story, 42, mm-hmm. The New Zealand film Whale Rider. I mean, these are all films where you see people taking on challenges that everybody's telling them beforehand, you'll never accomplish it.
Yeah.
But they do.
Yeah.
They do, because they have the vision, they have that value fulfillment concept in mind, and they are destined, quote unquote, to make it happen in the long run based on the beliefs that they use to consciously create the outcome.
Yeah. I want to talk about, before we wrap up the program, talk about something that obviously is at the forefront in the media today. That is a very serious issue for a lot of folks. And there are also a lot of folks who are kind of getting bored. They're tired of hearing about it. But it's still a very important aspect of our society. And that's this whole aspect of specifically, but not exclusively, men behaving badly. I think there was a movie that came out by that title, too. It's entirely possible. But one of the things that struck me about this was that it's coming out as if this is something new. And I read an article regarding, was it Maureen O'Hara? I think it was in the 50s. And she actually, I think there was an article written about her in regards to this matter that she spoke out about. And she didn't get a lot of film roles after that for quite a while. But I'm thinking, they're making this sound like it's new. This has been going on not just since the 50s, but, you know, if you want to focus specifically on the media, okay, movies and television, okay, we can go back just that far. Is the industry going to, as far as you know, going to somehow be able to look at this within that lens, the TV or movie camera lens, to not just tell the stories, the horrific mistreatment, but where do we go from here? What do we do next kind of thing? Because it's almost as if half the population is up in arms. The other half is scared to death that their turn is coming to be exposed for, oh, I don't know, maybe all they did was they made a pass, they were rejected, and they left it at that, and they walked away. But it could be construed as something totally different because everybody perceives things differently, and what might be an innocuous event to me, Brent, you might be completely traumatized by. So is this something that that we're going to see that may be part of that conscious creation within the media that may bring about some, I don't know, some healing, some understanding,
well,
some...
I think, you know, with what you've seen going on, having gone on in Hollywood, is symptomatic of a larger issue in society in general.
Okay.
I mean, it certainly is not limited to the studios and the, you know, the film distributors and things like that. It's something that's been occurring in all levels of society for a long time, you know, the corporate boardroom and,
sure,
and in politics and so forth. So I think that the significance of it having coming out in the film industry is that it's drawn attention to a larger issue. The film industry, of course, being most visible, is going to get the lion's share of the attention. But as so many of the empowered women at several of the award shows, like the Oscars and the Golden Globes, have been saying, this isn't just about the film industry. This is about the way women are treated in general. And in a lot of cases, it comes down to not only, you know, matters of sexual harassment and things like that, but just also in terms of opportunities to be able to tell their stories, to be able to get their projects off the ground, to be able to get financing to make their projects work. It's about leveling the playing field to be more inclusive for women and minorities than it typically has been. And, you know, actually there was a film that came out not too long ago that really kind of deals with that. It was a documentary called Bombshell. It was the film biography of the actress Hedy Lamarr.
Oh, yeah.
Who back in the 30s and the 40s was one of the most glamorous women in Hollywood. And she, you know, she had a successful film career that came out of that. But the thing is, she was more than that. She was also an inventor. She ended up developing a technique that has essentially become the basis for a lot of modern-day electronics, including Bluetooth and GPS and mobile phones and so forth. And she never got any credit for it.
Wow.
She even had a patent made for it, developed for it, but she never got any credit for it. And that's because in those days, you know, women were supposed to be glamorous. They weren't supposed to be smart.
Yeah.
So this movie is helping now to make people aware that, you know, there are women who do things more than just our pretty faces, that they have abilities that need to be recognized and need to be nurtured and developed and encouraged. And I think some of the most recent developments, that's just another expression of this larger issue that's now beginning to finally be, you know, that people are finally paying attention to it simply because people have been so beat over the head with it that they can't ignore it anymore. On a metaphysical level, it's also significant, I believe, in the fact that one of the things that a lot of metaphysical teachers have been saying for about 20 years now that they saw coming was something that they called the emergence or reemergence of the divine feminine into the world. That we've been in a paradigm that's been very dominated by masculine energy, that's been very much rooted in conflict and aggression and, you know, I'm going to come over and beat you up and take your stuff. You know, that whole macho idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's permeated every aspect of society, from, you know, the way businesses are run to the way politics unfold and so forth, and that even in religion and spirituality. And these metaphysicians have been contending that, no, this is out of balance, it needs to come back into balance, and that's where the role of the divine feminine and the characteristics associated with the divine feminine are going to come into play. I think some of these things that you've seen going on in the movie industry, where women have started to take their power and claim it and make use of it, that's another expression of that metaphysical idea as well. It may not be fully fleshed out yet. It may not have employed all the principles that it's ultimately destined to employ, but it's a starting point.
Yeah.
And we've all got to start somewhere. So it's a good thing to see. Not just for the movie industry, but I think for society and the world at large.
Well, if we've got to begin there, then we've got to begin there. It also seems, too, that this is getting much more, shall we say, coverage and attention than even the scandal within the Catholic Church with the priest issue, you know. But this also, I think that's also sort of an outgrowth. In other words, that was a phase that we had to go through. Now we're in this phase, you know, and
well,
I'm hoping that we can move on beyond these kinds of things, but it may take several years.
Well, it's unfortunate that sometimes we have to be beat over the head
to get
the message, you know,
true.
But then sometimes that's what it takes to come through. I mean, you know, our intuitional selves can attest to the fact that we go through that a lot every day, you know, in other contexts. But, yeah, you're seeing it here, and, you know, hopefully it will start to pay off. I mean, I like to make the analogy to it to the reason why people have nightmares. You know, people say, well, why do people have nightmares? They're so terrifying. And I said, it's usually because your dream self has been trying to give you the message in a more palatable, less intense form prior to that point, and you weren't listening.
Yeah.
So it's having to sock you over the head saying, hello, please pay attention to this.
Brent, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time and sharing with us here today. Before we let you go, as I think I've extended before, if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because this is fascinating. This is something that there's so much to talk about on so many different levels, and I really enjoy that. So, yeah, we'd love to have you in studio should you, you know, get lost and, you know, wander to the West.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to keep coming on the show. I love talking to your audience. I love talking to you. And I hope people can get something out of it. And in the meantime, enjoy the movies, too.
Absolutely. Is there a particular succinct message that you want to convey through all of the work that you're doing? Is there a particular I don't want to say theme, but we'll just keep with message that you'd like to share.
Well, I would say that probably the most important thing I would like to encourage people to do is to draw from the power of movies to write the script of your life.
Mm.
And if you can do that, you very likely will have a happy ending.
I like that. Website, how can we get a hold of you, get a copy of your book and so forth? Is there a single URL we can link to guide people in your direction?
Sure. The easiest way to find me and all of my writings is through my website, which is brentmarchant.com. Very easy to remember. Through that site, you'll find links to the places where you can find my books, which are available from all major online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and so forth. They're available in print and ebook formats. And also, when you go to my website, you can find out, you can find my blog, and you can find some of the other websites that I write for, and some of the other radio shows that I am a regular contributor to. So there's lots of ways to get in touch with me. You'll find all my social media contacts on there. It's a one-stop shop for everything Brent Marchant. So.
There you go. There you go. Fantastic. BrentMarchant.com. And we encourage folks to pick up a copy of The Third Reel. It is the third book in the trilogy, as I said before. I love that. I love that. I just finished writing my first book. And it took me 16, 17 years. So I'm not sure that I want to, you know, try another 16 or 17 for book two and then another. I'll be in my 90s.
Hey, but better late than never, right?
Well, that's what they say. It's Third Reel, Conscious Creation Goes Back to the Movies. Brent Marchant is my guest. And again, we thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I don't know that I asked you the final three questions that I have in any of the other programs that we did, but I will ask them of you now before we wrap things up. Question one is, who is Brent Marchant?
I would say a lifelong student of metaphysics and a movie lover since childhood.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want people to understand the joy that comes from using conscious creation to create the lives that they feel most fulfilled in living.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To spread the word.
There you go. Brent Marchant, thank you again for joining us here on the program. Third Reel is the latest book. Go to his website, brentmarchant.com, and we'll be linked to it as well. And again, thanks so much for giving us so much time here on the program.
Thanks so much, Richard. I appreciate it.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.